What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 33. All right, so today I wanted to do something a little bit different. I wanted to have somebody on who maybe you haven't heard of. This person doesn't have 100,000 Instagram followers, doesn't have maybe this mass movement, but nonetheless, he has probably impacted more people at a deeper level than anybody that I've had onto the podcast up to this point. And just remember, not all heroes wear capes. Not all heroes are social media influencers, right? Like, some people don't crave that, don't desire that. But nonetheless, the value that Troy brings is insane. So I hope you all enjoy it, and let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name's Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. Everybody, welcome back to the Primal King Podcast, and I'm super excited for my guest today. This is someone who I wanted to highlight because he is what makes this the best country in the world. He has affiliations and works with all kinds of different companies: Whitetail Addictions, Lone Wolf Custom Gear, Buck Fever Synthetics. And even though he's well known for his hunting, his scouting, his kind of mountain man lifestyle, he still teaches school. He actually taught me in junior high back in the day. He's a husband, a dad. He's impacted tons of kids through teaching, through coaching, and my older brother even named his son after him. So I want to welcome everybody. Mister, do I still got to call you Mister, or can I just call you Troy Pottinger?
I think you've earned it, Derek. Just call me Troy.
Awesome. So, yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I love being able to talk with you because, like, we're so similar in a lot of ways, I know, just kind of how we grew up, the way we grew up and everything else. And I kind of wanted to start there because you're like, I mean, I don't want it to be bad when I say it, but you're the average Joe, right? But you're doing awesome things. You're impacting kids. You're impacting your family. You're able to do a lot of stuff in the hunting world. So, like, I guess to go back, like, how did you grow up? For those who maybe don't know, you've never met you, what was kind of your upbringing like?
Well, you know, Derek, I'm just another man that is trying to make it in this world and do a really good job at being a man and being a husband and being a father. And you're right. You know, it all stems back from my roots. Like you and Randy, I grew up in the Salmon River. I started my life down there on the Little Salmon River, not far from where your ranch is. So I grew up in a logging town. Back when Riggins, Idaho was a logging town, and my mother was a teacher, my dad was a logger. So, my family, my grandfather was a rancher and owned a business in Riggins, and my extended family, and all that to say, it all started there, you know, living and growing up in small town USA, and my father being a logger was a pretty tough dude. But a great man, very, very godly man, awesome husband. My mom was a great gal and super sweet and loved kids and worked at the school. Used to drive the little bus up Race Creek and pick guys like Kurt Fellum up and take him to school. Who's one of my good buddies to this day. Anyway, all that to say, I grew up out of my grandpa's ranch, or I was in the mountains with my dad logging. Or I was at the school with my mom, and I was out on the same basketball court and football fields that you grew up on. I remember riding my bicycle from Windy Corner into Riggins, Idaho as a young kid. My dad giving me a ton of freedom and responsibility before I was in sixth grade. I remember riding into Riggins on my little BMX that I had mowed lawns all summer so I could buy it. You know, I didn't get anything for free. And I'd ride in, and Larson Anderson and I would shoot baskets, you know, and Pete Lee and all those old names that you guys might remember that were ahead of you boys. And yeah, I grew up in a great place, and being able to look back on it now, I've never forgotten where I came from. That Riggins country, I will jump in and say I was very fortunate to get to do my first teaching job with you and, yeah. and Randall and everybody. And I got to go back to my roots and coach football. And but that Riggins country, there's something about the Salmon River, the steep mountains, the logging community, the farming, the ranching. People there are just tough. And I'm so glad that I grew up there the first 12 years of my life. And then I moved to Northern Idaho after that due to logging. My father was looking for a new logging job that, you know, logging changed a lot in the early 80s. And the mill in Riggins, unfortunately, we had a big fire and it burnt down. So my dad had to find work. So then we moved to Northern Idaho when I guess I was 11, not 12. And Northern Idaho did the same thing for me. Logging community, very good people, tough people, you know, earned everything in life. And it just kind of stemmed from there. And my mother being a teacher, education was always really important to me. So I ended up getting a degree in kinesiology and a minor in biology and ended up being a teacher. And then right when I got out of college, I bought a bulldozer and started logging in the summers. So I pretty much kept doing what my mother and father did their entire life.
So for the people out there, because I bet a lot of people listening to the podcast don't have any idea what it's like to be a logger or to grow up around it. I mean, it seems like just like when I was growing up, I knew tons of people that came from logging families. And now I don't know that I know any around here anymore. So maybe for the people who are like, what was logging like? Like, obviously, you know, I know it's brutal, but what was a day like when you would go to work with your dad as a young boy?
Well, I'm half a century old, so I got to log back before there was so many mandates and rules and stuff. I logged really young. I started working with my father full-time in the summers when I was 13.
Wow.
So I did man-type work when I was 13 on every summer up in St. Mary's, Idaho area. And it was literally the most brutal, hard job I've ever encountered in my life to this day. But it taught me more than anything. Because I was 13, you know, you're just starting to get strong. You're not that strong yet. And I was toting 3 chainsaws a day trying to keep up with my father skidding logs to me with a big grapple skidder. And of course I didn't want to let my old man down. So I'm sawing 400 logs a day, 400 pieces a day for my dad, which is, the loggers will hear this and know that is a lot of wood. And on a slow day, we were sawing 300 pieces and I was the deck sawyer. So my dad just, he always believed in me and knew I could do it. I know I even had some loggers probably look at me a little funny when I first showed up. But after the first week, all the guys on the crews were treating me really good because I was busting my tail. And I'm telling you, I could barely get back to camp after logging all day. And we stayed in the mountains. We'd come home once a week on Wednesdays and weekends. I would get back to camp and literally scarf down the food that I could eat, and I would fall asleep immediately. So right then I learned a lot about my father. My dad could get back to camp, make me dinner, take care of all the chainsaws, visit with his friends, stay up till 8, 9 o'clock, no problem. It was wiping me out. So what I really learned from that, Derek, is just how tough my dad was. And I would have never known that if I wouldn't have got to work with him. And then after that first summer of logging, I started doing it every summer from there forward, and I got better and bigger and stronger, and it got a little easier, but it was never easy. But the thing that means the most to me is that, and I think God had a plan in this, is I got to work with my dad because when I was 17, my dad got killed logging. So I saw that side of it. And I would have never known my father the way I got to if I wouldn't have worked with him. So, excuse me, but it was a blessing. I saw Absolutely. a side I saw a side of people that it just everything in my life from that day forward after I lost my dad has never been that difficult, because what he had taught me through working so hard and then losing him and getting through that, I mean, he was my hero. Everything from that day forward to this day today, I never feel like anything is too tough. And I have that mindset in everything I do. It can always be worse. You know, I know you lost your father recently. So when I hear you young guys losing your dads, trust me, it really gets to me. And I care because I've been through it.
Yeah, it's so hard to go through. And especially for you, like, I couldn't imagine even being younger. Like, I mean, I was, 34 when I lost my dad. And it was like, you kind of find yourself asking, like, you know, I'm too young to lose my dad. And it's like, man, you know, a lot of people lose their dad a lot younger than I did. And so it definitely puts it in perspective. So what was the biggest lesson you learned from your dad? I mean, maybe before he had passed away, and obviously understanding, you know, kind of how bad things can be, but what do you feel like was the biggest lesson you took away from the time that you got to be with him?
Well, that's a great question. My father, as a logger, probably wasn't the stereotypical logger. He was a very godly man. And we would spend a lot of time, once I got to the point where I could actually stay awake after dinner, we would read the Bible together. We would talk about the most important things in life, being a good father, being a good husband, being a good man, having good character. When you screw up, admitting you're wrong, moving forward. But I think one of the biggest things my dad taught me through it all is just truly being gritty and being tough and never letting anybody in life decide anything for you or make you feel like you can't do something. My dad was, he would always tell me that sky is the limit for you. As long as you have faith and you put your trust in the Lord, you can do anything. So he always gave me that security, that confidence through teaching me those things and then working so hard. It all just kind of came together for me. And, you know, I'm sure I come across to some people as cocky, and I don't mean to, but I've never not felt confident. And even when I do have times in my life where I get worried or maybe I'm not completely sure of myself on something, I'll remember back to those days when I didn't think I could make it another hour, and I did. My dad was always positive. He was always pat me on the back, pump and be real positive with me type of person. He rarely ever growled at me. He was a really good motivator. He always knew what to say. Just so anyway, yeah, I'd say it was just the fact that in life, never let fear of anything drive you from trying to accomplish your goals. I mean, obviously there's intelligence that goes along with it, making good choices, but I'm just talking about, you know, we live in a world nowadays that's, there's so much fear that drives people. And it's sad for me to see that. I love seeing people that are strong enough and have faith enough to go out and do things in life that maybe are not the status quo, and they know that they are better for themselves and their families.
We live in a weird time, I feel like. And sometimes I wonder, you know, when you talk about your upbringing and kind of the way like we grew up here in these small towns, and I don't know, I kind of worry that we're losing it. You know what I mean? Because when you talk about going around in the mountains with your dad and the lessons that he was teaching you, and obviously you felt the love, but you also were pushed to go beyond your limits, right? And I feel like now, yeah, all like so many people anymore just always want to be comfortable. Don't push me too hard. That's bad. Do you ever find that being a challenge, like for you now, as you are kind of getting to be an older guy, right? And you're still dealing with young kids. Do you ever look at them and be like, man, like you guys don't even know how easy you have it right now. Is that ever hard for you?
Yeah, you know, I've taught for 25 years. And the thing that I have found so true with humans that if you just truly speak the truth to kids, they want to hear it.
Yeah, because they don't hear it anymore.
I mean, you guys had me as a teacher. You had me my very first year of teaching, so I'm not quite sure how I came across to you guys, but I know that you guys knew I cared.
Yeah.
I do know that, and I know Randy knows that. Yep. My challenge was always, and I'm going to answer your question, talking about kids nowadays, my challenge today, and the reason I do still love my teaching, I mean, I love it as much now as I did my first year, is that when I walk into my school every day, I know I have work to do. I know I have work to do on kids, and I really work on trying to get kids to feel great about themselves and to challenge themselves and to be cool with being uncomfortable. You know, I still coach, and, you know, any of the teams I put on the court or on the field, they always seem to have that unwilling ability through, and I hope I'm leading them in the right direction, but they're always tough. They're just tough as nails. And it's because I believe I speak to kids about how important it is to be gritty, to have grit, and to be okay with being uncomfortable. And what I'm finding, Derek, in this world is the kids really want that if they're not getting it at home. But you also have to have a little guts as a teacher and a coach to share it with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't go to work in fear. I don't worry about I never worry about being honest. And I'm honest with kids brutally, but I'm also – I love them up. And they know that. And I do try to be like my father was with me, where I always come in at anyone with a positive angle and not a negative angle. And I think that's important in life as parents, as teachers – raising kids is just getting across to people that it's okay to not be comfortable. It's okay. Get used to it. And then really enjoy the times where you are comfortable and you've earned and reaped the rewards of busting your tail and whatever it may be.
I think it's great advice. I remember playing junior high football when you were coaching Randy, for those of you who don't know, my older brother. And looking over there, and I would see you guys practice, and you guys would be just beating the crap. It seemed like just everybody was beating the crap out of each other, but it was different because for those who don't know, maybe some of you don't care, but hey, I'm going to tell you anyways, right? But our program was pretty bad, like when you showed up, and had been bad for, you know, like not great for a while at least. And
I think it was like 10 years it had struggled. Yeah,
10 years, and it seemed like we had different coaches coming and going. And then it was like when you were there, it was like people bought into it. And I don't mean any disrespect to any of the coaches that were before you or even a couple that were after you, but it was like those kids bought into it. And I was too young and I probably wasn't close enough to the team to remember, but I remember it was like they had a belief that even if they weren't going to win, like they were going to die trying. And I remember just thinking like how cool it was, because I didn't remember seeing that from so many teams from our school, at least for years before that. And so the fact that you were able to get them to buy in, being a young, I mean, at that point, what were you? Probably like 23 years old, 20, like young.
I was. I think I was 23. And, you know, I wasn't much older than the guys. I think I'm 5 or 6 years older than Randy.
Yeah.
And, you know, the biggest thing was for me is look them all straight in the eye, let them know I loved them, but bust their tail and push them. And my greatest or my number one objective with those boys, and those Riggins kids were the toughest kids, as tough as anybody I've ever coached, just brutally tough kids. They wanted to be coached. I still only have one picture of and I've coached at different schools, 4 different high schools. I have one picture in my classroom that hangs on my wall, and it's those Riggins boys. They needed to believe in themselves. That's all I really gave to them. Yeah, I knew some X's and O's about football, but I got them to, in my opinion, care about themselves, make some better choices, understand that this was a team thing, that everybody was important. Even the guys that weren't starting mattered. And I'll be honest, I wanted them to get to win. They needed to get to taste victory. And I think once those guys started winning some games and they saw that what we, not just myself, but my assistants, what we were teaching that first year, I had a bunch of tough, good football players. I don't even know if they realized. I used to tell them all the time. I'd line them up. I'd make them look at each other. I'd say, Joey, Randy, look at each other. You tell me we shouldn't be winning football games. Ben Ormsby, look at those guys. Tell me we shouldn't be winning football games. I just had some great kids. Justin Swift, just some amazing guys. And they had it inside. For me, it was just kind of getting to the point where I could open up that can and get it to pour out. And I don't know if you remember that season, but it was a pretty magical season considering where that program had kind of been.
Now you guys, what, went like 6-3 or something, I want to say?
I think we were 6-3. It was either that or 7-3, 6-3 or 7-3. Oh boy, they knocked off some teams they weren't supposed to beat.
Mm-hmm.
And we were one game shy of making the state playoffs that first year, if I remember right. And I'll put that on me. I probably wasn't a good enough 8-man coach when it come to scheme, because I'd played so much 11, that I was learning the 8-man scheme that year. And the truth is, Derek, I would have never left Riggins if the administration would have had their act together. And you'll remember those things.
We could probably do a whole other podcast about that.
That was just a tough year where they had a kind of a substitute principal, and I was a young guy. And people need to know this too, and I hope the Riggins boys listen to this. My mother got cancer, and I had to go back. I had to come up to St. Mary's. I had to. I had no choice. I mean, not had to. I wanted to because my mother got sick. And my brother and I, somebody had to be near her to help take care of her. So I had a lot going on, but I'll never, ever forget that year at Riggins. I mean, it was the best place I could have ever been in my life. And I hope those young men, including even you, having you in my 8th grade science class, I think it was. I hope you had a good time.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great. It was a great year. It was great. Like, I remember getting the spears on the helmets for like the first time. The high school wasn't just a bunch of lemon heads with their helmets.
Right.
Yeah. So as you have kind of, been able to go through the cycle, right? Like you've been able to go through the teaching and kind of grow up a little bit rough. Like, what's something now, because obviously you have boys now and they're starting to get a little bit older. What's something that you hope that, you talked about some of the things that your dad taught you. Like, what's something, I guess, that you're wanting to make sure that gets passed down to your boys?
Number one, I want my sons to have faith. I want them to always adhere to their faith. I think that's huge. That gets you, that takes good care of you when all the chips are down. Number two, just character, being a very honest, straightforward person, even if it doesn't always pay off for you. Kindness, but also, and humbleness, be humble and hungry. But, I've always told my boys and tried to teach them, be proud of who you are. Be proud of your last name. Represent your last name. People are watching you, so make sure that when you meet somebody, you look them in the eye, you shake their hand, if you say something, you mean it, or don't say anything at all. And then just, I've always told my boys, outwork and outsmart everybody that you have to compete with. You outwork them and you outsmart them. That was something my father always taught me. Don't ever let anybody outwork you, ever, anything you do. So I share that with my sons. And then, of course, my wife's incredible. She's a great mom. And she is right there with me. So I have a great teammate in this. And my wife grew up tougher than I did. And she has lived an incredible life and been very successful. And she's a gritty, gritty lady. She always tells me that she has to be gritty to be married to me. But yeah, I just, for my sons to be damn good men and really care about that, be good men to the ladies that they date. Be good to their mother, let your yes be yes, your no be no, and just, you know, just the simple things in life that are really important that sometimes, you know, I see as a teacher aren't getting taught.
Yep.
And they're not getting reinforced with some kids. And as a teacher, that I try to, obviously I'm teaching my curriculum, but teaching's way more than just curriculum. I think any student in the world tell you the teachers they really appreciate the most are more than just curriculum teachers only. And trust me, my curriculum's great. I feel like I do a great job with it, but there's more to it. It's life lessons nowadays as a teacher. And just helping kids get through tough times.
Well, and I look back even when I was in school and stuff, I don't ever remember, I mean, honestly, like what any teacher really taught me, but I, you know, like curriculum wise, not to say that they didn't, you know, that I didn't learn math from people or science from whatever, but I always look back and think about the people, you know, think about you. And, you know, I had another really cool teacher my senior year that helped me with some football stuff that, you know, it was like completely outside of school, but I just felt like he cared. He was just like, hey, if you need anything, like I played here, let me help you tape everything else. And so I always look back and remember that. I have to ask you, like, while we're on the topic of your boys though, because I know one of your sons plays football, big time football, one of the best programs in the state for sure. And man, did they have a heartbreaking loss in the state championship. I watched it online. What was the first thing you told him after that?
That I loved him and proud of him. And of course, my son takes it personal, like all those boys do. That's why they're good.
Yeah.
You know, he started to blame some things on himself. And I said, no, don't even go there. This is two great teams that the team that went for it, the first chance they had, got it. In double overtime.
Yep.
And I just told him, I love you. You keep your head high. You shake their hands. You make no excuses. And you come back and you win it next year. And it's funny because Ty's that kind of kid. He sucked it right up. And, of course, those boys felt bad. I mean, a bunch of sophomores and juniors on that Coeur d'Alene team that are all coming back. And trust me, they're young. That was a gut-wrenching, extremely hard way to lose a game. 57-56, double overtime. Coeur d'Alene had the lead going. You know, we kind of thought, you know, like, you never know. And you know what? Kudos to the,
with Madison, right?
No.
Rigby.
Kudos to Rigby. And excuse me for that. I was thinking about the game, but kudos to Rigby for just grinding.
Yeah.
Well,
Coeur d'Alene had a 14-point lead or something, right, in the fourth quarter?
With 5 minutes left.
5 minutes left, yeah. So, I mean, gosh, what a brutal way. And then what was it? They went for a two-point conversion in the second overtime to win it with the 2 points. So they would have either won it or lost it on that, and they chose to go for it.
And
tell you what, man, that takes some cojones for that other coach.
It does. Kudos to him for going for it. And, you know, I wouldn't – people question calls and whatever in those games. And one thing I've learned being a coach, I don't question my Coeur d'Alene coaches. People will. Those guys treat our boys – so incredibly good, and they're tough on them. They and that's one reason why Coeur d'Alene does well every year is they don't baby these kids. Mm-hmm. And you see it in how they play. You know, right now Ty has that article taped to the ceiling right above his bed when they lost that game, so he looks at it every day. And that's why he's lifting his tail off right now, even with COVID. That's why he is running hills. You know, he has dreams and aspirations to play college football, and he will. He's got that talent, God willing. He will, as long as he stays healthy. But that's one of those great life lessons that we're talking about here, that athletics that my son's got to go through, you know, and that is one of the hardest, losing the state title game. I think you won one, didn't you, Derek, or two?
Yep, we won one.
You won one. Did you only go to one state title game?
Yep.
Okay. So you've been on the other side of it. You know what it feels like to win it. I've always, you know, I don't say a lot to Ty because I already know he knows, but I know that it will make him a tougher, better man because of it walking on the field in late August this year.
Absolutely. The funny thing is that even though we won a state title, I still look back and think about the losses probably more than the wins. Like, it's awesome to celebrate it and to know that we won and everything else, but I've always kind of like hated to lose more than I've loved to win. Yeah, I don't know if that's just me,
no,
but
I
like
think
even
that's,
even coaching,
I think that's common.
You know?
I hated to lose too. I still hate to lose to this day.
Yep. I mean, I remember, you know, coaching this year or when I was coaching at the 5A level down in the Boise area, it would almost be like wins were just kind of a relief and losses were just gut-wrenching. And there's like a few times where it's like, man, why am I even doing this to myself? You know, my wife is like, why? You know, you need to just chill out about it. And it's like, no, you don't understand how much I hate to lose. It's like, you know, you go through stuff like your son went through and it's like, man, it's just gut-wrenching. I remember watching it thinking like, it's so cool for one team because they went for it and they got it. And then I'm just looking at the other team and it's like, man, they didn't do anything wrong. It was just somebody had to lose at some point in that game. And unfortunately for you guys, it was your team. But I mean, it doesn't make it any easier for those kids either.
No, that Rigby coach was cool. He did say nobody lost this football game.
Yeah.
It was a matter of us going for it before Coeur d'Alene did.
Yep.
Yeah, somebody did have an L in the column, but every kid from that experience, both sides of the field, every kid that got to go through that and that kind of a game, all those boys, both sides, will be better men because of it, one way or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they'll work harder this year. They'll come back. They probably won't be happy with the win until it's the state championship. So I'm excited to see them. I want to kind of transition, though. I know we don't got a ton of time left, but so you do all this different stuff. I watch your Instagram, and we'll kind of talk about where people can go and follow you at, but you're always in the mountains. Where does that come from? I always see you posting monster bucks all the time. Like, what do you got going on out there? How do you do it? Any tips or tricks for people like me who, I don't know, maybe sees one or two of the type of bucks that you seem to post all the time in my life?
Yeah. You know, you sparked something just a little bit ago. You said when you were coaching, you hated to lose and how it would tear you up so much and how hard you were on yourself about it. Well, I kind of had to get out of coaching because I was so competitive that way that I'm the type of person that would not sleep at night and I would watch film all night long.
Guilty.
And I got to the point where 7 years into being a high school football coach, six or seven, I coached at Lewiston, Salmon River, Lapway, and Post Falls. I had to decide in my 20s, I had to make a decision. I really did. I had to decide, do I want to make football my life career or do I really want to go get back to my roots, which I was working on my whole hunting thing on the side all the time, but never talked about it to anybody. Even when I was coaching you guys down there, I was running north after football season every chance I got to hunt whitetails with my bow, even when I was with you boys and Riggins. I always had a dream. My personal dream was to – I was always fascinated with whitetails since I moved to – St. Mary's. We bought a little ranch and I hadn't grown up in Riggins being a whitetail hunter and I fell in love with the whitetails on my property. So to get to the point here, that was something that I had a burning desire inside since I was 11, 12 years old to really, I really wanted to figure out hunting whitetails. And as I got older, I wanted to bow hunt them only. And I remember getting laughed at when I was young by locals that it was stupid to try to do what I wanted to do in the big mountains of public land in North Idaho, that it was a ridiculous waste of time. So I had some things happen to me in high school and even in college and in my first years of teaching that really made me feel like God told me, this is what you're destined to do. And this is something that I've given you a passion for. So go get it. So in my late 20s, even though I was getting fairly successful with my whitetail hunt, and I didn't have enough time being a coach, being a football coach. Yep. I still coach some junior high stuff in the winter and the spring because it works for time. I mean, I still enjoy coaching, but I couldn't do football. So anyway, long story short, got out of football. And I just decided I am going to become the best whitetail hunter that I can become. I don't compare myself to anybody else, but I wanted to be really satisfied with my efforts and my body of work. So I just dove into it with everything I had, mind, body, spirit. I felt like it's a really positive, healthy passion for me to follow. I mean, I don't go to the bars. I'm not out doing a lot of stuff a lot of men are doing in their 20s and 30s just to pass time. I'm in the mountains by myself a lot. Now my boy, you know, Ty goes with me a bunch, my older boy too, but I've always found peace and happiness when I'm alone in the mountains. And that allowed me to go to the mountains, spend literally hundreds of days a year outside of work and in my summers off, just living with the animals. So that happened in my 20s and into my 30s. And then I just started obviously using the biology and science of a whitetail against a whitetail. And I started knocking down great big whitetails with a bow and arrow from that point on in my 20s, 30s. And it just kind of, you know, I never ever approached anyone or asked for anything. Stuff has just come to me. And it's, in my opinion, just based on my letting my body of work in that realm speak for itself. And now I'm connected to some of the greatest whitetail hunters in the country and companies. And, you know, I represent some incredible families and companies that are involved in the whitetail industry. And of course I love to hunt bear and elk and everything else. And the truth is, Derek, I love being in the mountains. I just really feel at peace there and feel at home there. I've told people before, I was probably born 200 years too late.
I feel the same way too, so often. I totally do. So when you were first doing it, was it, you know, when I talk about like getting more serious about hunting and really trying to be the best, did you ever see it being like a business for you? Or was it just something where literally it was like, I'm just going to be really, really good at this. And then some of the, you know, the businesses and some of the other things that have come along with this or some of the relationships that it happened, or were you actually trying to pursue it as a business?
I never, ever tried to make it a business or a job.
Mm-hmm.
I just purely loved, and had an intense passion for being by myself in the mountains with these animals. And it grew. And one thing led to another. And I've always been open-minded and tried to not slam too many doors behind me and keep my doors open in front of me. And the next thing you know, I'm meeting wonderful people and people asking me, hey, Troy, would you come on board with us? You know, we really love seeing what you're doing out there in the mountains of the Northwest. And you kind of got a different, definitely a different playing field than most people do that you see on TV with bow hunting whitetails. You don't see too many guys from the Northwest doing it or, you know, being as consistent, I would say. And then the hunting industry, as you know, has blown up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's huge with social media. So I think it's a timing thing too, just my timing in this whole process. And, you know, probably one of the first guys in the state of Idaho that really got serious about doing what I do with, you know, bow hunting these whitetails. It wasn't a popular thing. I mean, you can ask people my age where you grew up and they'll tell you the same thing. Nobody really does it. And a lot of people still don't do it, but it's getting more popular.
Yeah, no, for sure. And when you were going through all this, like getting to the point to where you are now, like what, do you get hate for it? Because I know that there, I mean, hunting now is, which is weird to me, you know, still living where I do, it's not, but like when you kind of look at things at a bigger level, it's a lot more polarizing though too. I think it's a lot more popular, but it's also a lot of people that thinks it's inhumane and, you know, we should just leave them alone and do you get any hate? Do you get any pushback or blowback from it?
Yeah. And you'll be shocked at where I get the most hate from. I get a little bit of pushback from that anti-community, but not a lot, especially when I start talking science with them and the importance of being able to choose what food you want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I start talking about giant food systems that, you know, people basically live off of their whole life. That's not me. That's something my family chooses not to do. So I get a little bit from that, but I can usually articulate well enough with those people and just give them a, you know, a logical reason why hunting's so important to me. Yeah, you know, I do shoot big whitetails, but I like the 200 pounds of, or the 100 pounds of meat I get, or the 300 pounds of meat I get off an elk as much as I like shooting one with a big rack. Mm-hmm. And people say, you know, well, you just shoot the big ones for the trophy. No, they're the smartest, toughest animal in the world to challenge me. I want the challenge. I'm still who I am. As far as most men are like this, we like challenges. I can't imagine being alive and not liking a challenge. I just can't imagine that. So for me, it's the challenge, providing for my family, truly putting organic food in our freezer, like loading it up every year. I've watched my boys grow up on this nutrition, and it's just been incredible. You know, I'm 5'10", and my boys are 6'3", and 6'1", and they're horses, you know, wow. And they have eaten garden food and elk and deer their entire life. I understand the science of food big time. That's what I teach. That's what my degree's in. It's important for me. That's a huge aspect. But where I get the most hate is from jealous other hunters,
mm-hmm.
which will surprise, I mean, it shocks me, but I still to this day try to help everybody. And I've had guys totally just use me to get my information and then turn right around and want to hunt right next to me. Mm. And that's just the way it goes. That's how some people are. I feel sorry for those kind of people that literally just use other people to benefit themselves. I've had guys tell me, quit helping so many people. Quit being so kind with your information. Why do you help so many people? You know why? Because when I'm dead, I want people to say that guy was a good dude and he was always willing to lend a helping hand, whether it's in the hunting world, whether it's teaching, whether it's, you know, reaching out to an old friend. I'm definitely not perfect by any means, but I know it's important to help people in life.
Well, and I think the other side of it too, is you can help people all you want, but like, I remember talking to your brother and, you know, I was kind of talking about some of your Instagram pictures or something, or maybe stuff you'd post on. I'm like, man, how's your brother getting all these? Like, they're monsters, you know? He's either got pictures of them or mounts of them. And he's like, man, that guy will walk further than anybody you know. He'll hike further than anybody you know. Like, he'll just take off and go 10 miles into the mountains like it's not a big deal. And he's like, he just hunts where no one else is willing to. That's the secret. I'm like, yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, like, if you're just willing to do things that other people aren't, I mean, that's probably why you're at where you're at with this stuff, right?
Yeah, it goes back to my father. My dad always taught Rob and I, you just don't let people outwork you. Even if it, you know, runs you into the ground, then get yourself in better shape. Or there's no excuses. There was never in my mind have I ever felt like, if I ever make an excuse for something, I am very disappointed in myself and I get on myself and I correct it. And it doesn't happen very often. But no, I help people all the time with hunting all kinds of different animals, especially whitetails. And I flat out tell them to their face, look them in the eye, and I say, if you cut any corners or if you're not willing to do the work, you're never going to see the results that I've seen. You can have all the knowledge in the world and read my book or whatever, so to speak. It still doesn't matter if you don't go put it to work and apply it. And honestly, with your own instincts, think for yourself and learn for yourself too. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's important in this world. You can only learn so much from reading something or hearing it from somebody else. You also have to apply it.
Yep. And that's the step. It seems like that's so hard to help, you know, people understand is that, I mean, it comes back to coaching. It's like, I can drop the best play, but if you guys aren't willing to execute on it, if you're not willing to practice it, it's not going to do any good. And it seems like the same way in business. You can have the best business plan, but if you're not willing to work, probably not going to work. So great advice. So I want to kind of start wrapping it up. I man, this has been awesome. I appreciate your time. So much good stuff too. We'll have to do it again. But first of all, before I get into kind of the last part, where can people find you? I know you're active on Instagram, on Facebook. If somebody wants to come and check out all this awesome pictures that you get, the camera stuff that you have on there, where can they find you at?
Well, Derek, one of the coolest things my students have done for me in the last decade is they helped Mr. Pottinger with his social media. My kids are great. They line me out all the time. Hey, Mr. P, especially my ball players. Coach, you got to do this. Coach, you got to do that. So, yes, I am active. My Instagram is MTN_man33. So Mountain Man 33 is my old football number. And then Mountain Man, because I love to spend all my extra time outside of family and work in the mountains. And then just Troy Pottinger on Facebook.
Awesome. Awesome. So you can find him there on Instagram, on Facebook, always lots of good stuff there. So as we start wrapping it up, I want to ask you basically two final questions. I usually only do one, but I know you've been married for a long time now, and I feel like kind of this quarantine lifestyle probably has some people at each other's throats. Like, if you could give one bit of advice in your relationship, what would it be?
As a man, to make sure for your wife, make sure that you're meeting her needs, taking care of her, great communication with her, letting her know how important she is to you. And that's one place where my wife will tell me, Troy, you're just so tough or so rugged sometimes that sometimes you got to stop and talk to me and remember you're not talking to your boys or your football players. And that's really important to me. This whole COVID thing has been a blessing. I mean this. My wife and I have really got to spend some time together. It's been amazing. It's some quality, great time of just communicating, getting back on the same page. I think we all live in a world that's so crazy and fast, and we're all, you know, so many parents both work, and I feel like we've reconnected through all this, and it's based on quality communication skills. Just making that effort every day as a man to let your wife know that she's that important to you. And then, you know, just making good choices, doing the right thing, and just making sure that she has 100% faith in everything you do every day.
I think it's great advice. Great advice. Plus, if you spend a lot of time in the mountains, you can't really get in too much trouble, right?
Yeah, I've always said that. I tell her, hey, I go to a place that's very safe other than grizzly bears and wolves.
Yeah.
Outside of the predators, you know, I'm in a pretty safe place, honey. And the only thing that worries her is when I get out of cell service, and I do a lot. She's begging me for me to get one of those Garmin inReaches so I can text her from nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we used to always do that with my dad because he'd be riding his horse out literally in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
No cell phone. He's getting older. It's like, get one of those spot things where at least someone can come and find you if something is going wrong.
Yep, exactly.
I understand that. All right, so last question. What do you want the legacy of Troy Pottinger to be someday, whenever that day does come around, that you're not here? What do you want people to remember you by? What do you want your legacy to be?
That I cared. That I gave it my all for everybody, not just myself. And that I always had a strong faith and never allowed that to ever waver. I might come across as a hardcore guy, but deep down, all my strength for me personally comes from the Lord.
I love it. I love it. I know that you're building that legacy. You've already done that for so many kids. Being able to see it firsthand, you're doing it obviously for your family, and man, had a ton of fun. I'm so glad you came on. I encourage everybody to go out there, follow along, check out the Instagram, check out some of the posts that he does. If you're into hunting at all and you're not following him, what are you doing? Do it now. And once again, Troy, like, seriously, thank you very much for the impact that you make. Like I said at the very beginning, I wanted to make sure that we highlight people who are doing awesome things, the mindset behind it, and with what you're doing with kids, what you're doing with your family, ton of value in this. So thanks again for coming on.
Hey, Derek, thanks for having me. You know, I want to just end with a couple words, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
To anybody that's listening, no matter where you're at, no matter how hard life might be right now, because we are, as a country, dealing with some serious garbage and sadness, and there's a lot going down right now, just continue to keep chopping wood, meaning, you know, not literally, but figuratively, keep chopping wood, keep working hard, and try to be the rest of your life the very best version of you that you can be until you're done. And that's all we can do.
Totally agree. And like I've said so many times too, like for anybody who's out there listening to this, if things are super dark or bad, like reach out to me. I know people like Troy probably would say the same thing. Like, just understand that we'll get through this. There's a lot of crazy things going on, but we'll get through it. So if people do need help though, as always, like reach out to us, to anybody, and we'll help you as well as best as we can.
It was a pleasure, Derek.
Awesome. I appreciate you being on.
Thank you everybody for listening to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. There's one thing that I will ask you to do. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you get all of the new episodes coming out. Also, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that way other people can have access to this podcast, to this content, and this community. Again, thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.